This is EdUp Legal with your host, Deborah Solmore. She's an experienced higher education lawyer, most recently the general counsel for a system of nonprofit institutions, and she's going to be leading conversations about trending legal, regulatory, and compliance matters in higher education, with a focus on leaving out the legalese and making legal easy. Let's hear from your host, Deborah Solmore.
Welcome to another episode of the EdUp Experience Legal Podcast. I'm your host, Deborah Solmore. Today, I'm very fortunate to have a group of wonderful women with me. I have Lisa Lang, the Vice President and General Counsel at Ohio Northern University, Laura Frederick, the founder and CEO of How to Contract, and Sasha McGee, the Strategic Sourcing Director at Intermountain Health and an adjunct professor at the University of Dayton School of Law. I'm going to give a little intro here, and then I'm going to ask them to answer the question, which I'm sure is on everyone's mind, is how do these three women come together and what are they doing all on this same podcast episode? Today, we're going to build on a conversation that I had in episode 80 with Charlie Rose, who is the dean at Ohio Northern University's Claude W. Pettit School of Law. And if you listen to that episode, we spent a lot of time talking about a lot of great things, but we spent a lot of time talking about the importance of bringing practical and experiential learning to law school students. And in one of those areas that is really important is the area of contracts. For those of you out there who are lawyers, I know the focus of the podcast is to make legal easy and not have you be lawyers, but for those of you who might be, you remember in law school, we learned about the concepts of offer, acceptance, consideration, and the most important point in any case being in a footnote somewhere. But that's really not how it works in the real world. So I think we're going to talk a little bit about a wonderful program that these three women are putting together to sort of help in that experiential law space. Before I start the conversation, you might be wondering, why do we in higher ed care about that? So anybody who's been following higher education developments lately is probably aware the Department of Education is very focused on third-party servicer contracts that institutions enter with other entities. I had the privilege in April of speaking at the WASC Academic Resource Conference, where the entire senior leadership day was focused around third-party contracting. And let's face it, running an institution is a business, and in many times it's a multi-hundreds of million dollar business, and contracts are being formed every day. So please pay attention and listen in. This is a topic near and dear to the hearts of those of us in the higher education space. So Lisa, I'm going to turn it over to you first and ask the question, how did the three of you find each other? And tell me a little bit about the project that you're working on together, because it's fascinating.
So I'm going to try and give you a real quick synopsis, but it really goes back, I think, to 2020 when I started using LinkedIn as a means to find other people who were working in the space that I was working in, because I, as a general counsel for a university, I was faced on a day-to-day basis with having to review contracts. And a lot of the resources that I normally rely on, such as the Natural Association for College and University Attorneys, which is a great group, but the focus was more on the industry and less on the transactions that we did as a business. And in higher education and university and colleges really are businesses. And on LinkedIn, Laura started posting things related to contracting, and then over time she took this contract tips and she turned it into a more of a transactional a company that provided practical training on how to contract, and it fascinated me. And so I started following her on LinkedIn, and I started working with her on her initiative to change how we train practicing lawyers. And then, you know, the conversations that she and I started to have was, okay, well, you know, maybe we need to look at training not just new and experienced lawyers, but what about taking it back even a step before that and looking at how we're training law students? Because when we are with, you know, law school, we're learning about, as you said, the acceptance, the offer, the acceptance, the consideration, but we're not talking about the business deal and how we memorialize the business deal. So Laura and I started having those conversations, and Laura, and I don't know if you know this, Thasha, but back when Laura and I first started having this conversation, she dropped your name like months ago. And she kept saying, if you do this, you need to reach out to Sasha, because Sasha is, this is something that she is really passionate about as well. And so I'm glad that you and I connected to have this conversation, and you would be willing to help me at Ohio Northern with law school edition, contract con for law school edition, because I found out you were also an adjunct professor, and I start my adjunct professor position tomorrow at ONU. So thank you for helping me with the resources for that class. So that's what brought us all together, but I'm going to turn it over to Laura to talk about contracts con law school edition, because this is really her baby, and I'm just helping to bring it to fruition with Sasha's help.
Yeah. So to continue on that, yeah, we, Lisa and I connected, and a lot of us connected in 2020 during the pandemic, because we were all stuck home, and I started posting contract tips, and immediately there was this conversation, and all of us kind of came out of the woodwork, and we started chatting every day about contract issues, like how do you draft the indemnified party language, and what should the exceptions in an confidential definition say, or things like that. And who knew that so many people would want to chit chat about that every day. And that turned into this business, as Lisa mentioned. And then eventually I was like, we're a community, because we started really connecting and getting to know each other with these LinkedIn conversations and became a contracts community. And then it's I came to this idea, well, we really need to bring this community together in person. So we created the created Contracts Con, which is the first of its kind of contract training conference. So it's practical training, it's fun, and it's connection. And we focus on those three things. And so we had our first Contracts Con in February. It was huge. We had 600 people attend, 200 people in person. It was so much fun and really changed the thinking about how we do these training conferences and CLE. And so when I was talking to Lisa about it, and I'd had conversations with Sasha too about training, and I was like, as Lisa said, we need to bring this to law students. So we talked about doing a version just for law students, because the main Contracts Con is for practicing professionals and lawyers. So that's how it started, and Lisa ran with it, and Ohio Northern University was super receptive and supportive. So it doesn't surprise me that they're the first ones to put on this event.
So Sasha, tell me how you got involved in it. I know, I hate when people say, oh, before we press record, we were talking about blah, blah, blah. But that said, before we press record, we were talking about a little bit about, you know, your thoughts about what resources you might have liked to have had when you started practicing and had to review these. I mean, I was a Big Firm lawyer for many years, and I can tell you, I never had to review or draft a contract, but I did have to represent a client in a breach of contract action, which was really my first, you know, exposure in private practice to contracts. And then it was, the contract had already been drafted and my client was stuck with the language, helpful or not. But so tell us a little bit about, you know, how you kind of came to the program.
Yeah, absolutely. So most of my career has been in supply chain contracting. And I started as a sourcing agent, and you're just kind of given a contract, and sure, you have legal support and they'll help you with language. But for the most part, the more you can get done on your own, the faster you can get your deals done, the happier your internal and external clients are to that deal. And when I started out, we had internal resources, and then there were CLEs for lawyers that were very in the similar veins as what I learned in law school and not helpful to my day-to-day career. And so a colleague of mine actually found Laura Frederick on LinkedIn and got so excited about Contracts Con in 2022. What year am I in? And we went down to Miami and I got to meet Laura and so many other amazing people. And I was like, there is a community that wants practical training for professionals. And then when Laura announced that it was going to be, you know, she's going to take this idea to law schools, she said, reach out to Lisa. She's in Ohio. And so I just cold messaged Lisa and said, hey, I'm in Ohio too. I'd love to be involved. And just being connected to smart, talented people who care about this topic and want to bring real world examples and practical knowledge to professionals, but also to law students, you know, teaching adjunct, some of my students are hungry for that real world knowledge. And some of my students are confused by it because it doesn't fit in with the rest of their curriculum and what they're learning. And I really think this is the shift that law schools need to see. When I came out of law school, I had practically no practical skills, to kind of use the same word twice, but we need more hands-on experience. We need more real world things. And not everything can be summed up neatly with, you know, a classic case from the Supreme Court that's in a textbook. Some things need to feel real and tangible. And that's what I saw at ContractsCon Live. And that's what I'm excited to bring with Lisa to the students at Ohio Northern.
So I'm excited to move into talking about the curricula for the law school edition. But I will say, when you think about it, most lawyers that come to an in-house role to review contracts, either they learned that experience somewhere else in another in-house role, but that first in-house role, you know, depending on how long you've practiced, it's sort of, you would get the feeling, well, I've been practicing law for 3, 4, 5, 6, however many years, I should know how to review and write a contract. And then you look at it and you have, to your point, all of these various provisions. You know, does the insurance match my company's insurance? Does the technology, are we able to do the things that this contract says we're going to do? So much to dive into there, but I want to sort of move and focus. So Laura, after doing, and I'm sorry I couldn't join you in Miami. I really wanted to come. I had a prior commitment, but it looked like, first of all, it looked like the content was fabulous. And clearly all the LinkedIn posts following it confirmed that it was fabulous. So congratulations on your first contract, Con. So how are you shaping the program now to sort of think about how to teach law students and to think about having that sort of work hand in hand with the traditional contract principles that I believe law schools will continue to teach and which provide the necessary foundation? So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to focus on is real world. That's always job skills that you can use today in your job that exists in the real world. And nobody's using mailbox rule, mirror, you know, what is it, mirrored off or whatever those things are. Like, I've been doing this forever. And I was big law contract lawyer. I worked at Tesla's contract lawyer. Like, I know this subject. But all those arcane rules, I can't name a contract case, honestly. I have no idea of any of them, but I know contracts because I lived and breathed them for 25 years. But what we do in the real world on contracts, when you're working commercial contracts, is we are triaging. And that's a lot of what we do, especially in-house, because I say the law firm lawyers who work with transactions are like surgeons. They take the time they need. They're highly paid. They're highly specialized. You know, that's who I want dealing with my $500 million credit facility. But when you're in-house, you have 10 contracts that need to get approved today. You're not going to be able to read them all. You're not going to go back and look at, well, what does the mailbox rule say? And does this one have consideration? No, it's all about risk management. It's all about being more like an emergency room doctor. We're triaging. We're making sure the patient doesn't die because of this contract, meaning the company takes a huge hit because of one deal they did. So it's all about that. So it's just such a different feel to it. So with this training, we're going to be simulating some of the practical things we see. So we talk about training without cases, and where we're saying, okay, confidentiality, here's how you approach the definition. Here are the things you should worry about. Watch out for these kind of words and these conditional language in this thing, but always in that context of what you'll see. So we don't sit and say, let's discuss the 7 types of conditional language, because everybody's eyes gloss over when you get to that point, even me who loves contracts. We talk more about, okay, you see this exception and how it says public domain? Don't use public domain. Use either publicly available or, you know, we kind of get that shortcut of what lawyers and professionals who've been doing contracts for a long time, what we know, and how we do what we do, that's what we're trying to teach these law students. Maybe I'll turn it to Lisa or Sasha to really kind of talk about the program itself.
Go ahead, Sasha.
So I think one of the things that Lisa and I are hoping to bring to the program, and she can speak to it more, but double clicking on something you said, Laura, is this idea that when we're doing contracts in a practical setting for a business, there are deadlines and you can't get every single line perfect. There's also this idea that these contracts are going to be used by people on the ground to drive their performance. And it can be the best written provision that would stand up in court and would be completely airtight in litigation in your ideal situation, right? But if the folks on the ground can't understand it and don't understand what they have to do to perform this contract, then it's useless, right? Most of the time we won't go to litigation. Most of the time we'll pick up the phone and call the other party and say, hey, this isn't working. What do you want to do about it? We can prevent that by writing and drafting in like a clean, simple, understandable way for the folks who have to use the majority of those provisions. And so I think that level of practicality is something that sometimes law schools miss. And so I'll pass it over to Lisa to talk about more of what we're going to bring into the program related to these concepts.
Yeah, thanks, Sasha. And, you know, I think what that brings up is this whole concept, if it's about the deal. And so what you need to understand as the lawyer is you need to understand the deal. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about higher education, what I found is I was reviewing a lot of contracts for professors who were like in a research setting and they were hiring people to do things as it relates to their project. And as crazy as this sounds, some of the quote unquote agreements that I saw, it had nothing in the agreement to talk about what they wanted to deliver, when they wanted to deliver it, and how much it would cost. And so that is that's a problem. And so what I hope to do with law school students is to tell them, listen, what you really need to focus in on is it's not just about the boilerplate terms and making sure that you have certain provisions in there, but it's also making sure that you can understand what the deal is. And is the deal sufficiently memorialized in the contract? And to Sasha's point, is it memorialized in a way that people can understand? And what I want to tell law school students tomorrow when I start class is I want to tell them, don't be afraid to go to your business people and say, I don't understand this deal. You know, you need to explain to me what this means. And that's part of what we're going to do at Contracts Con Law School Edition. What I hope to do is we're going to have a series of practical training exercises in a workshop setting where we're going to go through a scenario when we're going to say, okay, you are the in-house counsel. You've been assigned the task of, say, drafting a contract, reviewing a contract, and talking about what it is that your role as the lawyer is in that scenario, and what do you do and how do you do it? And we have to let go of this idea as lawyers that we know everything, because the one thing I've learned every single day is not how much I know, but how much I still have yet to learn and how much I need to know and learn about my industry.
One of the things I think is interesting in supporting, you know, your business clients as a general counsel or as any in-house lawyer in the contracting process is, what do you want to happen if it doesn't work out? Right? One of the major purposes, in my opinion, of a contract is to put down what happens if certain parts of the deal go bad or don't work out. From if we have to have dispute resolution, what does it look like? Where is it going to take place? Maybe we don't want to sever our relationship. Maybe we want to sort of have a way in which to solve problems. And I think, you know, that's one of the things I think sometimes the businesses are so focused on getting to yes and getting to done that when you ask them, well, what happens if this doesn't work out? You get deer in the headlights. Well, of course it's going to work out. Okay, well, maybe it will, hopefully. But if it isn't, here's your opportunity to protect yourself. So I don't know if that's something that's sort of on the agenda to teach people. And I think, Lisa, this goes to your point about all the things you don't know. Understanding the deal, but then asking the questions, well, what do you want to happen if it doesn't work out? There's, you know, an array of things we can write into this agreement for you, but it's your agreement. help me understand sort of what you want to learn. Laura.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the role of the lawyer working in-house has transformed over the last 10 years or so, 15 years. It used to be, it was more like a law firm inside the company, and they would give us our advice, and you'd still, you know, it was a more formal relationship. Now I see the lawyers in-house are with the business people, and their job is not just draft a contract, let's draft this provision. It's counseling the client. It's counseling the client on all the aspects, like what goes wrong with payment? How are we going to structure this so that we make sure we get paid? How are we going to structure this so we don't suddenly lose this product that's mission critical to our business, and they have a right to suspend services at any moment? What are ways to get around that, and how are we going to approach it? So lawyers, in-house lawyers and professionals who work with contracts have really become counselors, not just about the contract and the negotiation, but about the whole relationship, about problems. And you can't counsel if all you know are cases. You have to know the business. You have to know how things work and how relationships play out. And nobody's teaching that part. We have to teach that.
I think that point bears repeating over and over and over again, that if you want to work in an in-house environment, the most important thing you need to understand is that the quote unquote practice of law is a small piece of what you're expected to do. It is vital, it is critical, and it is important because you are the one with the law degree who knows how to practice law. But, you know, it's just, and I think, you know, when I started in my GC role 5 years ago, that was really something that I had to have this aha moment. Not that I had to be something more than a lawyer, but what did that actually mean? I don't know, Lisa, sharing that sort of GC role together. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that or.
Yeah, you know, the thing I think that in general, I want law school students to know and understand is you are a strategic business partner, and they have to stop thinking about it as an adversarial position when it comes to vendors and business partners, because at the end of the day, you know, yes, you need to protect yourself in the event that things go wrong. But oftentimes what you want to do is you want to figure out a way to work with your vendor or your business partner to figure out a way to salvage the deal. It's not us against them. It's about how is it that we take the risk and can we allocate it between the partners in order to be able to continue to move forward with a partnership. And I'll give an example. COVID for me was a huge lesson in that principle, because, you know, when we went and we were no longer having in-person classes, we didn't have a need for the bookstore to be open and running. We didn't need food service because our students weren't on campus. So we needed to have conversations with our vendors. It wasn't about let's use the force majeure clause and let's cancel this contract. It was, what do we do in order to continue to have this positive relationship to them? So we amended the contract during the period of time we didn't have students on campus, so that they were going to lose some and we were going to lose some, but we didn't want to put the burden on either one of the partners. So it's about having that conversation, and it's not an adversarial relationship, and it's about how to try and make the deal survive.
Yeah. And again, kudos to you know, you all to partnering, because I think this is going to be an amazing program. You know, one question I have for you, Sasha, is in your sort of day-to-day, not in your role as an adjunct professor, but in your day-to-day business role, when you think about this new course and this new program for law students, you know, what would you say are maybe, and putting you on the spot, the top three things that they need to walk away from at the end of this course, understanding that today's law students are just not learning?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think number one is really, which we've already talked about, but really understanding the deal. So when I teach transactional drafting, I start my students with this idea of what is the deal? How can you add value to it by being that consultant, that strategic consultant, whether you're in-house or whether you've been hired as external counsel? What are the key risks? What are the key interests of your client, internal or external? And then how can you add value? And so some of the assignments that I give my students in transactional drafting are intentionally vague, and they get a little bit frustrated because part of their grade is adding value to the deal. So thinking through operationally, how would we get paid? Would we put this money in an escrow account? Who would put it in that account? And filling out those details, because that's part of the role, is helping your business partner understand you might want to order 2,000 widgets, but do you have warehouse space? If not, how many do you want to get at a time? What happens if you're not moving them fast enough? Like, could you do a consignment deal? Those are ways that you can add value by thinking critically and asking those questions. You can't do that if you don't understand the deal. So that was number one. Number two, clean, simple drafting. Drop the legalese. Unless it's a provision that requires citing specific language or specific regulation, make it easy for your business users to follow the contract. If they need to deliver, say deliver. Don't get too fancy with it. And then number three, just proofread, 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 and then proofread a third time. It's so easy when you are the person in the contract that you understand what's going on. I tell folks on the ground on my team, if you've been working on a contract and redlining it a long time, send it to a buddy and have them read it. If they, not knowing what the deal is, can't understand what the mechanics of what's happening is for your deal, you probably need to clarify somewhere. So those would be my top three tips.
Those are fabulous. Number two sort of really resonates with me because my podcast tagline is making legal easy. So it's talking about legal to an audience where we don't talk like lawyers. So I love that. And number three, I used to joke with a very close friend of mine at Skadden, who was a corporate M&A lawyer. I was a litigator, that I would be petrified to be the M&A lawyer because I absolutely would put the comma in the wrong place on a number and it would not be in my client's favor. So I hear you, proofread, proofread, proofread. Well, it sounds like an amazing program. And so to close this out, if I could go around the room, proverbial room, the virtual room, and just sort of get each one of your sort of final thoughts or hopes for now, after the course is over and you've delivered the course for the first times, like what would be the, you know, your best expectation of how the course goes? And Laura, since this is your brainchild, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, I'd love to see a couple things, but primarily contracts count for law students in every law school, that it's an annual event for every law school. And we bring practitioners on campus to teach existing students about the real world contracting practices. But then eventually to have that practical content that I teach and use in my training and bring that to the law students. We have legal writing classes. But the challenge is a lot of the legal writing classes focus on real estate and corporate. They don't focus on technology. They don't focus on commercial. They don't focus on purchase orders and how you write those. So there's a lot of common business documents that get passed over because they're not legal documents. But those are some of the most important contracts I ever work with, are things like PO terms and statements of work. So I'd love to see law schools focus more on kind of what really happens in the day-to-day as opposed to, again, what law firms do.
Lisa, what about you? What are your expectations for the program at your own institution? So,
yeah, my most immediate hope for Contracts Con Law School Edition is that through the course of the day, we are going to help students create what I like to call their own contract toolbox and their own tools for that toolbox. So I hope to give them maybe some checklists for when they review, tips on how to redline, maybe a template contract. Just something that they can begin with when they first get to their first position to give them a launch pad or the basis to start doing what they need to do when they go out into the real world after law school.
And Sasha, I'll turn to you to close us out. Other than having the program come to Dayton, what else are you hoping would be your expectation for the program?
So I love Laura's dream that all law schools would have that. So building a dream on a dream, I would love to see more law students excited about contracts, about transactional work. And then I'd love to see them interested in starting their careers in supply chain procurement, see some folks apply for my team. I've hired two JDs and I've got another opening. So little pitch, would love to see JDs interested in starting their career where I started my career, and find a lot of just value in the work that I do.
Well, it is my sincere feeling that if anybody is going to be able to execute on this to get all of your big dreams to come true, it's the three of you. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to talk to me today. And it's sort of just like a final plug for what we started talking about at the beginning, was the relationships that you can build through the LinkedIn community and you know, sort of finding people that are passionate about things that you're passionate about. And I know, Lisa, you and I met through LinkedIn. And so I've met so many wonderful people there. And while I'm, not a spokesperson for LinkedIn at all, there's just generally ways to sort of build these connections in these communities. So again, thank you. And good luck with the program. I'd love to have you back on another episode to talk about the absolute success of it.
We're going to absolutely hold you to that.
You've got it.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.